Hello?
Hello?
Yes?
Who is this?
Who are you trying to reach?
What number is this?
What number are you trying to reach?
I don't know.
I think you have the wrong number.
Do I?
It happens. Take it easy. Hello?
Why don't you want to talk to me?
Who is this?
You tell me your name, I'll tell you mine.
I don't think so.
What are you doing?
I'm getting ready to watch a video.
Do you like scary movies?
No.
Wait, really?
Yeah, really.
That's a little reductive, don't you think? Like you don't like a whole genre of films?
Doesn't that just make your question equally reductive?
Whatever. What about like really good horror movies?
Give me some examples.
The Shining.
No, I don't really care for Kubrick in general. And that movie is so weirdly disconnected, but still involving the book, but only sorta. I mean, why is the actual Shining still even in the movie? The only thing it does is summon an extra character to the house to die.
What? No, see, Danny can see that, you know what, never mind. The Exorcist.
Boring and 70s.
Rosemary's Baby.
Hard pass.
The big franchises then, Halloween, Friday the 13th.
Corny, sexist crap.
Jesus, you're just a total dick, aren't you? Just a real piece of shit.
Well, that is just exceptionally rude for a wrong number.
You know, you never told me your name.
Why do you want to know my name?
Because I want to know who I'm looking at.
What did you say?
I want to know who I'm talking to.
That's not what you said.
What do you think I said?
I think you said, "Durr, I'm a big dumb idiot who smells like two butts, and I can see you."
Okay, that's enough. I got your stupid co-host out here, and I'm gonna fucking murder him.
What?
Look outside, dipshit.
Oh my god, is that John? Tied to a chair? Wait, is that one of my good chairs?
What?
Dude, use the plastic chairs. That rope is gonna fuck up my varnish.
I'm gonna kill your fucking co-host.
On the patio? I don't want to lose my security deposit. Could you kill him on the lawn? Damn it, I said the grass. Man, I had shit to do this weekend. Now I gotta hose John Blood off the concrete.
I just killed your co-host. I'm gonna kill you next.
Blood's gonna get all coagulated. It's gonna stain for sure. Well, at least he died doing what he loved. Slouching in a chair.
Guess which door I'm at.
Oh, what now?
Guess. Guess which door I'm at. If you're right, you live.
Man, I only have two doors. They're right next to each other, and they're glass. I can see there's two of you. You know this is the house line, and I called the cops like 3 minutes ago, right? You can't pull this scream shit anymore. Cell phones were invented.
Really? Oh, fuck. Well, we're definitely still gonna kill you. You're a total dick. We'd be doing the world a favor at this point.
Look, I'm gonna turn on the sprinklers and go to bed. You can stay out there in your corny robes with your obvious Chuck Taylor sticking out.
What? Oh, come on, this shit was complicated. And I told him to wear black shoes, moron Matthew Lillard. Fuck this, we're going to Denny's.
Oh shit, hold on. I could gruffle on some Denny's. You gonna help me pull my co-host to the curb for trash? I think it's recycling week.
You can't recycle a corpse. What the shit is wrong with you?
I can if he's tied to my wooden chair, you dipshits. It's all organic. Let's get this done and go get on a slamwich. Welcome to Afterthought, the companion podcast to System Mastery, where every other week we get together and talk about whatever the hell we want, and then also we answer a million listener questions, and really all we actually do is answer listener questions. I'm Jeff, and with me, as always, is John. John, how are you?
Oh, you know.
Terrible.
The worst.
Just not a good time for being a John.
Yeah, just the literal worst time ever.
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry about your situation and your circumstances.
Oh, my things and stuff.
Well, other than the fact that you're doing poorly, like Dickensian levels of poorly.
I'm straight up living a Cormac McCarthy novel at this point.
Well, you know, the nice thing is that in four episodes or so, you'll have like a trained team of street pickpockets working for you. McCarthy. Might as well just go into the waiting arms of the judge, John. How much do you want to see a
Blood Meridian?
How much do you want to see a Blood Meridian movie with John Goodman as the judge?
I mean, if it's John Goodman as the judge, kind of a lot.
Right? I mean, there's a lot of people you could cast as the judge, but John Goodman.
Yeah, or John Malkovich.
Or John Malkovich Goodman.
Or John C. Reilly.
Or John C. Reilly. Yeah, sure. Just famous Johns.
Yeah, just famous Johns.
John Popper, the lead singer of Blues Traveler, is the judge in Blood Meridian.
And coming up next, Blood Meridian with John Bon Jovi is the judge.
After that, Blood Meridian starring Jonathan Taylor Thomas as the judge.
Yep, famous Johns.
We've listed a few.
Those are some famous Johns. Also, Eddie Murphy. Hey!
Whoa!
Deep cuts.
Easy now.
Oh.
Tip your waitress.
Have you seen this in the news? Have you heard about this?
Joey Buttafuoco as the judge of Blood Meridian.
Oprah. Uma. Uma. Oprah.
Jeff Galooly stars as the judge in Blood Meridian. Yeah, 80s references specific to New York. What now?
What is up now, Internet?
I was 7 when that happened, and I was not in New York. Anyway, this week we read, John, what do we read?
Vampire the Masquerade.
That's right, Vampire the Masquerade. And we had a lot of people commenting on that, letting us know what they thought of the review. We've had people saying things like, I feel like you guys were unnecessarily hard on Malkavians. That's probably true. I mean,
nah.
I've never played Vampire, so I don't know. But in my experience, they always end up, whenever the game has the one wacky class, I mean, think about it. Think about that in games that you have played in the past. You got your Kenders.
Your Crazies.
Chaotic neutral is an alignment.
Yeah.
It never builds to good memories. It's kind of like when Changelings are an allowed playable class or race. There's that one guy like, I turn into you and I steal your stuff.
Yeah. Always. It's always. If you let someone be a big douchebag with whatever in your system, they're going to do that.
They will. They will take advantage, and it won't take them very long. But a lot of good comments. We also got invited. This is awesome. We got invited to the only, like, I don't know if it's sanctioned or official or what the right term is for it.
The only actual LARP in...
Well, I'm sure there's other LARPs. I think there's something special about it that makes it so unique.
I don't know, man. The only LARP I could find at all in San Diego was Changeling.
Well, okay, but watch this. Hey, John, I am a Toreador, and I dislike that you are too not artistic for me, you Ventru.
Okay.
See, we just LARPed. That was a vampire LARP right here in San Diego, so there's got to be something special about
it. No, man, I have a D10 near me. It wasn't LARPing.
You didn't roll it. In fact, I saw you turn your hand into a rock. You were all
wow.
set to do some rock, paper,
That's
scissors.
That's magic.
So anyway, we got invited to participate in the only something or other vampire LARP in San Diego.
Well, there's Camarilla Sanctioned.
Camarilla Sanctioned. That's got to be what it is.
Yeah.
And that's up in Sacramento, which is, what, about 11 hours from here by car?
Something like that.
11 and a half, something like that. California is huge, guys.
You guys, California has the same area as France, so yeah.
Yeah, it's real goddamn big. And we're at the very southern tip.
Yeah.
So anywhere we go to in California, we have to start from the bottom. We're like level zero California
Yeah,
characters.
Man. We start at the bottom, and now we're here.
Now we're here in San Diego, about 15 minutes from Mexico on a good day.
Yeah, we started at the border, and now we're here.
So we will do our best to make it to that Vampire LARP. The Vampire LARP organizer even told us that he thinks it should be a bonus content goal on our Patreon. I'm a little of two minds about that because I don't... As much as I like the whole review fatal thing as sort of a joke, I don't much like putting transitory stuff on the because I like
yeah no the when we do the Patreon goals should be stuff that we actually continue to do rather than just a one time thing and then that's it.
Yeah, so we're working on the details about how we'd fund a trip to Sacramento to participate in a LARP for you the listener because we don't really. I mean, actually, I kind of want to do it. It actually sounds kind of fun.
Yeah.
I mean, that sounds awesome, and it was really nice of them to invite us. So we're working out the details. We'll figure out some way to raise the cash and make it happen.
Yeah, we'll do something.
We'll do something. In the meantime, we do have a couple more Patreon goals in there. The we will review Fatal at $500. We're getting close to that. I am real worried, because that book is enormous.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, there's no timetable on it, so, you know.
Yeah. So was there anything else you wanted to talk about related to Vampire the Masquerade?
Well, the other thing that a lot of people really didn't like as far as the review that we got was we never got too deep into the whole vampire setting or the mythology of it. We just sort of covered the like the clans and some of the rules and a few other things like that.
I think people were probably right to assume that vampire could technically do a two-part episode.
Oh, well, yeah. Vampire is one of the huge ones. The problem is, specifically in second edition, since that's the one we were doing, there really isn't a ton of information. Like, I know a lot of the people out there are like, oh my god, vampire has this huge amount of information for it, but that's not really in the main book.
There was a lot of stuff in the main book that we didn't necessarily cover directly. I don't, like, for example, I don't even know if we said the word caitiff or whatever it is.
No, we never really talked about the clanless.
Yeah, or the what's the other organization that's in, like,
the Sabbat.
The Sabbat, thank you.
Who are sort of the, so you've got the Camarilla, who are the vampires who are like, let's all just blend into society and make sure nobody knows that they're vampires. You have the Anarchs, who are, we don't belong to any group, and we're just going to go ahead and do whatever we want.
Mm-hmm.
And the Sabbat, who are kind of like evil vampires. Like, whenever you'd see vampires in, say, like, Lost Boys or any horror movie that has, like, a group of vampires, that would probably be Sabbat, because they're like, look, human or cattle, and we're just going to be, like, blood orgies all the time, and hopefully Blade doesn't find us.
So they're the bad guy vampires, effectively. And if you're playing the Camarilla, that makes a useful bad guy set of vampires to have, because you can basically dust them without feeling bad about it.
Yeah, so, I mean, most of your villains are going to be either you're going to maneuver politically within the Camarilla.
Which I assume is what you do at LARPs for the most part.
Yeah.
Actually dusting each other would be a pain in the ass at a LARP.
Yeah. Or you're fighting Sabbat or Anarch stuff.
Or werewolves or,
usually you aren't gonna fight many werewolves because they will just tear your shit apart.
Are they on a higher power scale in the White Wolf universe?
Yeah, I mean, especially in the old world of darkness,
mm-hmm.
the rules they have for werewolves are like, oh yeah, if a werewolf wants to fight you 1v1, you are dead, period. You just are.
Lucky you, it mostly wants to live in the woods and be a wolf.
Yeah. But if you're like, oh, I go out into the forest at night, it's like, okay, werewolf finds you, and he rips your head off and shits down your throat. Congratulations.
All right. So anyway, yeah, there was some discussion about the idea that we could have spent a little more time talking about Vampire, which, you know what, I don't disagree with. I feel like it's one of the big books. It's probably one of the big four.
Yeah. And but, you know, Vampire the Macarena is, it's one of those books that I just look at and go, a lot of the information you would talk about is just shit that came out in side books.
It's true. I mean, we get a lot of requests from people to do, what's it called? Ars Magica or whatever it is. The one that's got the ducks.
Yeah.
And they're always like, oh, that game is so great. It's got a race of, like, basically cartoon duck people you can play.
Yeah, you can just play as, like, Uncle Scrooge or Donald Duck.
The problem with, and again, I'm still not sure if that's in Ars Magica or something else. But no, Glorantha. It's in Glorantha, not Ars Magica. Right,
yeah,
now, there
was right.
someone who was so mad at me for a couple of minutes.
Oh, he's so angry.
Yeah. You know what, guys? I'm sorry. It's not even in Glorantha. It's in Talislanta.
You guys, I'm sorry. It's not in that.
Turns out it's in the box set Indiana Jones role-playing game.
Turns out it's actually
ducks.
In Dark Heresy.
There we go. It's in Dark Heresy. My apologies to everybody.
Everyone.
Anyone who was super triggered by me saying that it was in Glorantha, it is not. It's in the second edition D&D Menzo Baranzen box set.
It's actually in Hux Sunt Dracones.
It's a thing in Fate, I'm pretty sure.
Well, yes, I mean, it is.
Of course it is. But no, the problem with him in Glorantha is that the Darules, which are the duck race, are in some source book. So if you read the actual Glorantha book, it's just... The one thing about Glorantha that's interesting is that it has a strong insistence on not having, like, elves and dwarves and what have you, and say it's all new monsters. But otherwise, it's just another old heartbreaker until you get to that source book that's got cool ducks.
Yeah,
the same problem in Vampire.
Well, and even the second edition Vampire, like I had mentioned during the original podcast, it leaves out all of the other clans, so you don't have the sort of on-their-own clans like the Ravnos or the Followers of Set. You don't have the Lasombra or the Zamichi, who are, like, sort of the main ones of the Sabbat. So talking about anything aside from just, there's a Camarilla and they're all very political.
It would have displayed your core competent knowledge about all things vampire and my total lack of knowledge.
Yeah.
Because I'd have been sitting there going, the Lasombra, they sound like they're sleepy.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like I have a La Sombra mattress.
That sounds like a great mattress to have. I've got the Sealy La Sombra.
It's so comfortable.
La, la, the thing la, is,
I can't make any jokes other than it sounds like a mattress brand because I don't know what the fuck the La Sombra are.
They are darkness manipulators, so they have obtenebration is their main discipline.
Ugh. All right.
And their weakness is they have the classic vampire can't be seen in mirrors.
Oh, that's actually kind of neat. I'm glad to have that show up somewhere. That's a vampire myth that you don't hear as often as you ought to.
Yeah, so that was one of their things.
I kind of want to make my own vampire RPG where you have to roll 5 times on a huge list of things about vampires.
Yeah, it's just that giant D100 chart of things that are true about your vampire.
Yeah, like, and it's all stuff that's gleaned from history vampires. So maybe you'll get stuck with like a Chinese hopping vampire stuck together rigor mortis legs. African vampire thing where if someone manages to get some sesame seeds into your mouth and you can't chase them anymore. That one where you can't go into a house unless you're invited. And then how can you be killed? Only if you are buried at a crossroads with a lemon in your mouth.
Only then.
Only then can you be finished.
No limes.
Limes will not do the job. It must be a lemon. Thank you. I think that's some kind of turkey vampire.
Gobble, baby.
That's what I meant.
Some kind of turkey vampire.
Some kind of turkey vampire.
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
I'm pretty sure... Pretty sure some kind of turkey vampire was the bad guy in Count Duckula.
Oh yeah, no, that was the other main villain in Poultrygeist.
His name was some kind of turkey vampire.
Oh man!
All right.
So yeah, there is a lot more information for vampire. Maybe we'll do, you know, when we get to another supplement thing, we can do that.
Yeah, we'll totally do some vampire stuff. I mean, there's so much White Wolf to cover.
And there are so many white weens to get through.
There are, although I'm pretty sure we're doing black ween next year, so. I'm going to get that black dog imprint line only. That's going to be a pain in the butt since we already did one of them.
Oh, yeah, man. Doing black ween is always a pain in the butt.
Hey. Wow, I can't even believe you said I'm glad you said that, not me. Okay, so you want to answer some questions from listeners, maybe?
Yeah, sure, why not?
All right, here we go. Let's get some questions started. I'll get us started off this week with a question from Ohio Bagpipes. And Ohio Bagpipes says, as someone who plays the bagpipes and has to wear a kilt regularly, it's required for both band and solo competitions. Hey man, buck that trend. You show up to a solo competition in like a pair of jeans or something, see what they do to you. Man, they're not going to stop you. Show up as the River Bottom Nightmare Bagpiper. All right, I just wanted to say I really appreciated your opinions on people wearing kilts. I generally dislike wearing mine, and I can't wait for the end of the day to take the thing off and put on some normal clothes. The worst are the socks. Those things make your legs really itchy. Oh, yeah, they're like knee-length wool socks.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. Every time I see someone walking around in a utilikilt, I roll my eyes. Yeah, that is the natural state of seeing someone in a utilikilt. It's not the utilikilt. It's more like the utilikilt is just the first step in a package. It's like you can't buy one without it coming with an Indiana Jones hat.
Oh, yeah. No, you see the guy in the utilikilt, and you're already rolling your eyes because as you move up his outfit, you're like, yep.
Check. Oh, is that a fishing vest stuffed with dice? Check. Oh, man. All right. I'm marching with 500 other people wearing kilts, playing bagpipes. Some guys are off in the corner throwing telephone poles. People are eating haggis over by a tent. There are actually people from Scotland around. Even under these circumstances, I wouldn't wear a kilt if I didn't have to. Anyway, rant over. On to the question, how do you feel about people walking around in Renfair garb, both inside and outside the context of an actual Renfair? Well, inside a Renfair, it's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, do it.
Great, go for it. That is your space to do this. It's like if I see a guy in a utilikilt and they're at some, like, Scottish festival and people are doing like the caber toss and whatnot. I'm like, all right, man, this is the place where you do that.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm a very tolerant and accepting person. So if I'm sitting down to a board game night at the local store and I'm about to play some Betrayal at the House on the Hill or Pandemic Legacy or whatever, and my friend sits down across from me and he is wearing like a waistcoat and breeches, I'm going to be like, yeah, all right, whatever. I'm not going to say anything about it, but my eye roll will be audible.
Yeah. I'm going to give him a once over and be like, all right, man.
So I'm never going to say anything, except there's always limits to this sort of thing. I'm going to go ahead and put the kibosh on anyone wearing anything from Naruto to anywhere other than an anime convention. Man, you show up in one of them black robes with the clouds on it, you know I'm going to push you down. I'm going to dump your books like you're in middle school.
Just slap your nerd books out of your hand.
Yeah, that's going to happen. And I have the same reservation for steampunk anything.
Lol.
Because it's just stupid. It just keeps piling on top of itself. So, all right. So, John, how do you feel about people walking around outside of Renfair in Renfair Gas? Oh, wait a minute.
I think it's great. You get some top shelf honkers.
I was going to say, you get some of them shelf honks. Top shelf honkers. By the way, the name of one of our characters in our Pandemic Legacy game.
Yeah, Professor Top Shelf Honkers.
Yeah. But no, you're definitely... Renfair is basically an excuse for a boob shelf.
Yeah, that's basically it.
Yeah, corset with a boob shelf. That is the Renfair item number one.
Yeah,
if you're a woman, you trade out that utility kilt for a corset and about a square foot of top shelf honker.
Yep, that is the Renfair garb.
Yeah. So, there you go. We're both fans. John?
All right, next one comes from Blue Bogle. I recently read this kind of chilling article on r/RPG where the author talks about gaming in prison. He describes a game he imagines where he takes the Nixon administration and turns them into playable characters. It's some entertaining stuff. If you guys could play a game where the party was made of a presidential administration or other similar political organization, which group would you want to play as? What system would you use? How would you stat out the various players in the game?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I'm actually going to go outside American politics for this and talk about how in, I believe it was in the late 80s or early 90s, the Royal Court of Nepal went all batshit crazy as one of them got jealous about like rights of succession or something and killed almost all of the other ones.
Wow.
Yeah, like the Prince of Nepal went nuts and killed a bunch of Nepalese royals, and we didn't hear about it because it was in Nepal.
Well, yeah.
In the U.S., but I feel like that would make for a really interesting sort of evening chamber game. Which one of us is the insane royal who's going to kill the rest of us?
How to host a Nepalese murder?
Yes, how to host a Nepalese royal murder. So that's going to be my first recommendation. I'll have a real presidential one for you after John, too.
Well, the thing is, as soon as you said that, I was like, oh, yeah, man. Doing other weird political things would be great. Like having an entire campaign where you're all Pharisees. During the time of Jesus, that would be awesome.
And I just thought of another one I would do. Man, I can't do presidents for the life of
me. No, fuck presidents. But,
okay, how about this one? One player is Kim Jong-un, and the rest of them are his loyal sycophants.
Oh, my God. And no, one player can't be Kim Jong-un. It's like Maid. The GM is Kim Jong-un, and then everyone else. It's just a game called Dear Leader.
Yeah, and you have to get shit done, and if the GM notices you trying to get shit done, he waddles over and fucks it up.
Yeah. You have to try and not gain the GM's attention.
Yes, it's a whole game of you have to roll to avoid the GM's attention, and if you do, all of a sudden your factory has to be made more glorious or something. You're like, oh,
he's gonna take a trip to your factory, which means everything shuts down.
Everyone gets sent to the distant town where TV is not a thing. Man, Dear Leader is I am 100% on board for that. That is a new game, right? Someone make that. Kickstart that immediately. And involve us and pay us.
Just pay me.
All
fuck
right.
You, pay me.
So there you go. Let's see. From Flame Titan. I was in a thread discussing some changes to the Firbolg that were made in the transition to 5th edition when I got thinking about Jeff's dislike of how generic humans are. It seems that for better or worse, in most fantasy fiction, and by extension RPGs, humans tend to be the blank slate of characters. That is, if you play an elf, you're either playing into the tropes of an elf, or your character is very specifically playing against those tropes. Your race defines you and how you act. Humans, by contrast, don't have to worry about what the stereotypes of their race is. If you can think of a personality, you can use a human to play it. Humans are specifically there so you can play something when race doesn't define who you are. So I guess the question is, does an RPG need a blank slate archetype so that somebody who doesn't want to deal with playing to or against the default can do so? And if so, how would one create one in a game where there were no humans whatsoever?
Well, that's easy enough to do as long as when you are, say, describing a race, you don't say in broad terms, you're like, this is, you know, the race of these people and they are all industrious and they all prefer to live in mountains and all of them do. Okay, look, if you say every last one of them is this, then that's a little restrictive.
Honestly, that's one of the reasons I prefer to not play humans in RPGs is because you see these, like, you look at dwarves in an RPG, and like John says, every one of them loves gold and lives in a cave, and they're all named Gorax, and it's like, okay, well, I want to play one that isn't, because right off the bat, I've made an interesting iconoclast character, and all I had to do was pick a dwarf and then say no.
Yeah.
And it was easy. It was easy to make this new iconoclastic character. Like, it's simple. The problem is that dwarves don't make sense as a race. Like, you look at them compared to humans. What do humans have in a D&D game? Oh, they are the most adaptable. They are very creative, and they reproduce quickly. And that's all you ever give humans. And then dwarves are always like, every one of these guys has braids in his beard.
Yeah, like, everyone dresses the same. Everyone has the same likes and dislikes. Everyone has the exact same background.
Yeah, so the answer really just comes down to write your other races better.
And the other thing is, like, every race is like, oh yeah, this is the god of that race. Humans have like 20 different gods for all the different aspects of their life, but it's like, no, if you're a dwarf, you are going to worship like Moradin, and that's it.
Yeah, I mean, granted, I can name like 6 other dwarf gods off the top of my head, but that's because I've read a lot of expanded universe D&D crap.
Oh, that expanded universe, when the dwarves start getting laser pickaxes.
And you get that dwarf Admiral Thrawn. Ugh, I know so much about art.
Fucking Thrawn beard.
I'm sorry. I should have made him stereotypically Italian to stick with our in-jokes.
Yeah, you should have. You done goofed.
I'm going to edit that back into normal. No, I'm not. By the way, people, we're recording this on Halloween night instead of bothering with Halloween stuff for you.
For the listener.
This will come out about 20 minutes after I finish recording it.
Yeah. When this comes out, it is because we have just finished.
Yep.
Laziness.
Well, I actually have a lot of fucking editing to do on the intro, so let's speed it along, John.
Woo! All right. Mirrored Deck asks, I was going to send in a question about how one Earth you avoided making a nice day for a white weaning joke, but then I listened to the bonus content on Patreon. Given that you are clearly time travelers, what historical figure is the most fun to hang out with and play RPGs with?
Incidentally, we did actually use the nice day for a white weaning gag on the core episode of the first White Ween.
Yeah.
It's just that it was after all the plugs and junk.
Oh, so, plugs and junk.
So that's just telling me that people aren't listening after the plugs and junk anymore, so I'm going to have to move that to like the middle of the show.
Come on, plugs and junk.
Show you.
Yeah. I'll show you, and if you like what you're listening to.
Damn savvy consumers. Quit pressing skip ad.
So best historical figure to hang out and play RPGs with. Ooh, let's see. I'm going to go ahead and say, you know who's good to dick around with is Alexander the Great.
Alexander T. Great. I mean,
Alexander T. Great.
He's pretty full of himself. I would like to hang out with him just because he's one of history's most famous bisexuals, and I'm sure he's probably pretty good looking from all the horse riding in time.
Oh, yeah, man.
So. And he died young, so.
Yeah, well, he would show up, and he'd be, like, you know, 16, and he'd be playing a game, and he'd be super into D&D 4th edition, because, you know, it's all tactical, and also he's not an idiot, so he likes 4th edition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't argue with that. That all sounds about right to me. I think I might have gone with, let's see, I'd like Ptolemy.
Ptolemy?
Ptolemy, yeah.
Ptolemy?
Ptolemy. Or any one of them various, like, Greek or Roman philosopher types, because a lot of them felt like they were kind of...
Like Pliny the Younger?
Yeah, Pliny the Elder, Pliny the Younger, Plato, any of those kind of guys.
Yeah, I'm going to get my Aristotle and some RPGs on.
I just want all those dudes.
Oh, dude, playing, like, Numenon with Aristotle and Socrates, and you'd be like, come on, guys. Come on, you're a bug.
That would be fantastic.
You're a bug in a house. What do you do?
I feel like a lot of those guys were just goofballs of their day. Like, I can't see Aristotle without picturing him, like, stumbling around drunk with his dick hanging out of the front of his toga. Like, that's just what I picture.
Well, it's probably because of all that famous art of Aristotle stumbling around drunk with his dick hanging out.
So I'm going to go with the famous Greek and Roman philosophers.
Good. Great. I'll go with the great Chinese and Eastern philosophers.
You're going to get, like, Confucius?
Yeah, I'm going to get all them, and we're going to play in a game, and then we'll play against you in a game.
We're going to play against each other in an RPG.
Yeah, West versus East. Skins versus shirts.
I like my odds. All right, let's see. From Mundangerous says, do you ever have survivor's guilt when your PC doesn't fall during a would-be TPK? I'm not talking about role-playing the character's guilt. I'm talking about dying for solidarity with the other players. Regardless of my character's disposition, I feel guilty when I run away to avoid a TPK, even if it's the last PC alive and death would have been pointless. Also, it's one thing to avoid dying pointlessly, but if... Oh, I'm sorry. We should answer the first question here. So, I've actually... This is a blank spot in my gaming history. I have never been party to a TPK.
No, unless... It was like the last session and we were like, yeah, and then rocks fall and everyone dies. Then I've never had a point where we've had a TPK or even really close to it. Like, I think I've had at least a couple sessions where maybe one person got knocked out, but that's about it.
I can tell you that I've been playing World of Warcraft since beta, and I've been playing a Night Elf the whole time, and I have zero guilt about shadow melding my way out of a shit raid. That is, I never feel bad about that.
Right? Oh, yeah, man. That's why I was main rogue forever, because it's like, oh, what is this going to shit? Well, I'll vanish. Thank you very much.
I'm a shadow melded druid. I'm going to just stand here. You guys have a good time.
You enjoy.
How's that repair bill? I don't understand why people don't like Night Elves. They're so good. All right. Also, it's one thing to avoid dying pointlessly, but have any of your characters ever run away from a fight when the outcome was as yet undetermined?
No, no, I haven't. I have had someone else do that.
Really?
Playing Rifts, one of my good friends from high school was playing a character with the anarchist alignment,
mm-hmm.
and there was one point where he was like, "Nah, fuck it, I'm leaving." And we're like, "What?" He's like, "That's what my character would do." He was like, "No, the odds are bad, I'm leaving."
God damn.
His character ended up leaving the campaign because, like, we were in England or Africa or something. We were doing one of those Rifts world tours.
Sure, yeah, that's the fun way to play Rifts.
And at some point, there was some dragon who was like, oh, you know, I could probably give you a gift or whatever if you finish this thing. And he was like, yeah, I want my gift to be to go back home. This is garbage. And so the character was just gone. He's like, no, my character is done with this bullshit. He is in way too much danger all the time. He leaves.
Did he just replace him with another character immediately? Was that like the whole ploy?
No, he was like, oh, no, this is the thing the character would do. I'm going to play it in character. And then he just made a different guy for next week.
Man, that guy's a little too method.
Oh, yeah, man. He was super into it.
I mean, I feel like his next character should have quit before he joined the party. Like,
his next character was Daniel Day-Lewis.
Yeah, again, he should have stayed home and just worked on method.
Just
perfected the high-pitched Lincoln
method
voice.
Head.
Just method man. All right. Let's see. Hot dog question. Oh, it's a hot dog question.
Hot dog question.
Hot dog question. You are walking down a dungeon corridor and find a green demon relief carved into a wall. Inside its open mouth sits a delicious, perfectly cooked hot dog and variety of condiments ready to be devoured. You know the risk. Do you eat the hot dog? I actually do know the risk. There's a sphere of annihilation in there.
Hell yeah, I'm not getting that. I ain't a moron. I know what's what.
I've read the Tomb of Horrors.
You can't fool me, hot dog.
Can't get me with the Monty Hall question. Can't get me with the Tomb of Horrors. No,
not happening.
I can get a, let's see, I think you need a greater or above demon to come by and put its armor in the door to break that particular trap. So what I'm going to do is I'm gonna just straight up stand around talking about how delicious that hot dog is and how horrible it would be for mortals if any demon came and got the hot dog. Until I straight up Tom Sawyer some hot dog into doing the problem for me.
Yeah, you Tom Sawyer the hot dog.
Tom Sawyer, a hot dog demon.
Yeah, the hot dog demon.
Yeah, a hot doggy-on.
Oh, the doggy-ons.
He's just a hot one. There's also cold doggy-ons.
That really just sounds like it's sci-fi now. I come from doggy-on Prime.
I'm hot dog boy. Everyone on my planet has the power to generate a tasty hot dog whenever they want.
Well,
also, I have this Legion flight ring.
Welcome to the Legion, hot dog boy.
Here's your flight ring, so you have the other power. If you die, we can just replace you with another hot dog boy. Our team doesn't make any sense.
This is dumb.
Everything taking place in the 35th or whatever century is dumb.
All right. Next one is from Nameless Nick 01. Do you recommend eating the placenta like she-wolves do in the wild? What wine would pair best? This is Afterbirth questions, right?
Yeah, welcome to Afterbirth, the podcast where we discuss placenta, afterbirth, umbilical cords, and general goos and oozes that issue forth during the birthing process.
That's my favorite game, goos and oozes.
General Goos and Oozes, by the way, is the name of the colonel in our Pandemic Legacy game.
Oh, man, I remember listening to the 50s, those goos and oozes.
Goos and oozes. So anyway, on the Afterbirth podcast today, we're here to discuss whether or not you should eat the placenta like she-wolves do in the wild.
Yes, you should. Exactly like she-wolves do in the wild. I want you to go out into the woods, and I want you to eat that off of the ground like an animal.
Yeah, and specifically off a wolf. Like, get yourself a nice wolf placenta like a she-wolf would in the wild.
Yeah,
you're going to have to take it from a she-wolf. Don't worry about it. They're usually pretty cool when they've got their young around.
Also, the best wine to pair with it is some two-buck chuck. You get that, you drink that down, you take that midnight train to Drunk Town.
Man, you can't make that joke. That is a California regional joke.
Aw, it's sad.
Trader Joe's isn't located everywhere. Let's see. First of all, it depends on what type of animal you're talking about here. We're humans, so we're likely to be red meat. I'm going to guess that there's a lot of blood and viscera associated with eating a placenta directly, so it's going to be a thick, kind of hearty red. You're going to want to pair that with something like a... it really comes down to how you're feeling. If you're feeling like you want something a little spicier, you're going to want to go with a Merlot or like a really powerful cab. If it's from like an unusually pregnant woman, like more pregnant than normal.
Unusually pregnant.
So pregnant. Then you might want to actually go up to something like a big Amarone. That's really up to you.
I recommend the port.
Yeah. Oh, God. Now, clearly, a port is for postpartum depression times drinking.
Portum depression.
Portum depression.
Port possum. Welcome to Port Possum.
Dude, Port Possum would be an amazing place for like a Nickelodeon show about a camp.
This is Port Possum. And they all go, they're in the Possum Navy.
Yeah, they sail around in those little, it's a regatta show. It's a show about a bunch of kids in regatta class at Port Possum. Okay, so you're going to want to pair that thing.
Oh
with
my
like,
God, and Pauly Shore is the camp counselor.
Oh, dude. Let's get this happening. Port Possum starring Pauly Shore. By the way, cannelloni beans, you're going to want those as your side dish. The whole thing should be paleo if possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there you go. Afterbirth question.
Done.
Yeah. All right. Next question comes to us from Kevin Slimfast Beta. And it says, Dear Senator John Boozman. I think that's a real senator, but honestly, I don't know where from.
I don't know.
I don't do any research. As your constituent, I am writing to urge you to support, I'm writing today to urge you to support humane and comprehensive immigration reform legislation that provides hardworking immigrants with a pathway to earning citizenship, protects families and the most vulnerable members of our society, and respects the rights of workers and border communities. It is imperative that the Congress work to fix the broken immigration system this year. The current system is not only broken, but unjust. Insufficient family-based visas and application backlogs force family members to choose between being separated for extended periods of time or illegally entering the country. Undocumented youth face deportation to countries they may have never known and are prevented from realizing their dreams of contributing to American society. Congress, you must address these issues. Therefore, I urge you to support humane and comprehensive immigration reform legislation, which includes an accessible pathway to citizenship for all 11 million people without documentation, including those who would benefit from the DREAM Act. Works to maintain family unity in all elements of the immigration system, protects the most vulnerable, especially refugees and asylum seekers, respects the rights of the U.S. and immigrant workers, and ensures the human rights of immigrant families are protected as immigration laws are enforced. Sincerely, Kelvin Slimfast Beta.
Well, that all sounds good and all, but, you know, these dirty immigrants.
I was going to say, John, if you could answer this as Senator John Boozman, who I am going to assume is a Southern gentleman.
I was
going
to say, what, so like R. Georgia?
Yeah, probably. So if I could get an answer from you in an R. Georgia-style accent, that'd be great.
R. Georgia.
R. I be the mighty Senator John Boozman.
John Boozman is a Southern gentleman. R.
After fighting to discover the Fountain of Youth.
I've been here ever since, building up the Boozman name. I used to be named Grogman.
Now, and then Rumsman.
Now, just various Boozmans.
As a mighty immortal pirate.
Here with my wife, Elaine Boozler.
I find that the best way for immigrants to get purchase here in these 50 states is to wait for statehood to form over hundreds of years.
What you need to do is get yourself some hidden plunder and then get yourself an ill-gotten gain. Join in the American way by bribing your way in.
Until then, you can walk the plank back to wherever you came from.
Yar.
Shiver me, parrots, and walk the yardarm. I'm a terrible pirate.
I don't know what I'm talking about.
Answering questions. That's the first time anyone ever actually did what we wanted and asked a question meant for someone else entirely. And what did we do? We did a dumb immortal pirate routine.
Yeah, well, that's why I want questions for other people.
So you can just goof around and not do the thing?
Yes.
All right, fair enough.
All right, next one is coming to us from Aaron Weisbrucker. I assume that's how you say that.
I am 100% certain. Actually, I'm pretty sure it's, yar, it's be Aaron Weisbruck.
Yep, good.
Matey.
So, two questions. One, we all know the kind of stuff that pisses you both off in RPGs. Exclusionary seduction rules, interminable skill lists. But what are your favorite rules that you'd like to cut and paste into just about any game?
Let's see. Probably the Rule Zero. If a game doesn't have that, it needs it. You know, the just do what it takes to make this work.
Yeah, you are the ultimate arbiter as the GM. If something isn't working, just don't do it.
That is a really, really important one. I also like big random lists that aren't mandatory.
That's my problem, is I love random roll charts. Like, I love them.
Yeah.
But I don't want it to be part of the core system. Like, whenever it's, oh, am I rolling to hit someone? Every time I do this, I need to go on this huge random roll chart and see where I hit and what I do and how severe it was.
Yeah.
Like, that's bogging everything down.
That slow evolution of hits from you roll a die, do you hit, you do some damage, to you roll a die, now roll another die to see where, now roll another die to see where in that area, now roll another die for severity.
Okay, and now we're going to see if he has armor in that area that you hit.
Yeah, that, I mean, granted, we've managed to revert right back to talking about pet peeves as opposed to what we should be talking about right now, which is our favorite rules that we've seen in games.
Yeah, I like when games don't have overly complicated differences between weapon types.
Mm-hmm.
I love that.
You know what my favorite rule is and what I wish every game had? The one where it's like, fighters do a D10 damage with their weapon. Rogues do a D8. Done.
Yeah. Like, I don't need to have, in the same way that I don't need a ridiculously long skill list, I really don't need 20 different weapons and you trying your best to make all of them unique in some way.
Yeah.
Because all that's going to do is go, oh, this is the good one.
Find the good one, which is the one that's the right combination of no defense penalty, heavy damage, lightweight, and fairly cheap. Let's get that. Everyone's got that. What is it in this game? Is it battle axe? Wow, weird. All right, everyone's got a battle axe.
Yeah, it's one of those things that I'm like, man, I don't want that. I also don't want there to be rules for like, oh, well, you know, if you swing a sword, it does a D10 damage. However, if you're shooting a bullet, it does a whole bunch of random dumb bullshit. And I'm like, no, just put damage on things. I don't care. I don't want you to have, like, different bleeding rules for damages.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. By the way, you just had my cat jump up onto your lap, so I added a business card. I sprinkled liquid catnip all over. So if the cat goes nuts on your lap, that's what's happening.
Great, thanks.
Just want you to know.
Thank you so much.
I mean, mostly Bearcat just tries to eat catnip, but the other cat that we have goes fucking nuts when she smells it and starts, like, rolling around and blissing out. And
freaking the fuck out.
Dude, she is it's like watching someone hanging out at, like, Burning Man with the other cat. just rolling around in the dirt, just, ah. It's a different fish show every time. Dude, we're at Burning Man. We're not at a fish show. Keep your premise in order. Not for me.
Okay, so second question, why do you think it is that the RPG genre skews towards sword and sorcery fantasy over lasers and alien science fiction? Is it just because fantasy got a head start with D&D? Clearly there are plenty of sci-fi games, some extremely old, like Traveller, but it's always seemed to me that they don't have the same gravitas or weight in the industry as the fantasy stuff. And I would agree with that.
Yeah, and I do think it is a lot of it is 800-pound gorilla stuff.
Oh, yeah.
It's just because D&D came first, and it's the only one with cultural cachet nowadays. I mean, other people have made claims on it. Vampire has to be so big. Think about what Vampire accomplished in the 90s. It had a TV show.
Yep.
Had a professional wrestler. Had a bunch of really important video games.
Yep.
And even then, it didn't crack that. If you were to go up to your random friend on the street who's not a gamer and be like, hey, man, have you ever heard of Vampire the Masquerade?
They would probably say no, unless they were like, wait a minute, I think I know that's a video game.
Yeah. Now, think about any sci-fi game that has that cultural cachet that D&D earned.
Yeah, the main issue is people know, like, fantasy as role-playing. Like, that's what they think. If you were to go, like, oh, well, what is role-playing? People are going to think, oh, that's elves and wizards. Like, that's what role-playing is to people who aren't already in role-playing.
Yeah, people who don't really know what it is have this sort of natural preconceived notion that it's someone pretending to be an elf. For some reason, everyone's wearing green cloaks at the table. One of you is named Blackleaf.
Yeah, the amount of stereotypes for role-playing is all based around fantasy and those, like, oh, you're going to be super goofy and you're going to have candles and cloaks and dumb bullshit.
Yeah, the other thing is that it's self-perpetuating. Because it's easier to fit D&D references into media properties, you see more D&D in more media properties, and it builds the awareness.
Yeah.
Like, think about Stranger Things. Like, that show was great. They were playing some hokey-ass D&D in that. We're like, oh, man, let's see if we can fireball this god. That'll finish this fight. But on the other hand, you knew what they were talking about right away. If they had been sitting there playing Traveller...
Oh, yeah.
Or some other early sci-fi game. If they were there playing, like, Tekamel, Empire of the Petal Throne...
Then, yeah, no one was going to get that.
No. People have no idea what's going on.
Yeah.
So that cultural cachet is self-perpetuating. It just keeps building. I'm not sure what would ever break it.
At this point, there would have to be something that gained a lot of traction.
We need a new Satanic Panic.
There just need to be something that had enough news about it, but also then gained a lot of popularity to the point where people who didn't care about it had heard of it.
Yes. Because, like, I mean, even things like getting mentioned on the Big Bang Theory aren't good enough. Because I know Big Bang Theory has routinely mentioned things like the leather gods of goddesses of Phobos and stuff like that. Like, just real old school video game references. Those things don't suddenly gain super popularity just because they were mentioned on a TV show.
It's not
big enough.
The people who are watching that are probably thinking that that was just made up for the show. Like, if they talked about the Petal Throne of Tekamel, they'd be like, oh, that just sounds like some... like word salad that someone made up to sound like a nerdy thing.
By the way, John, if I could ask you an afterthought question, have you ever had that happen where someone comes up and asks you, like a family member is like, so you like the Big Bang Theory, right? Because you're like also a nerd? Because I get that. Like my dad watches that show religiously and wants to talk to me about it. And I'm like, Dad, I'm not going to drop the standard complaint that nerds have about the show because it's racist and offensive.
Yeah. But it's just a bad show in general.
I'm not. If you don't know what I'm talking about, people on the internet, people are always calling it nerd blackface. It is not, because no nerds are deeply hurt, and there's no. Oh, it's just the worst thing you could call it. It's just a bad show. That's good enough.
Yeah, it is a show for people that are not what they are. Like, yeah, people think, oh man, nerds must love this, and like, no, not really. This is another show where it is laughing at the nerd instead of with them.
Yeah, and also, for some reason, all the nerd girls are hot chicks.
Yep.
Whatever. All right, moving on. What do we got here?
Oof. We're at number 11.
Yeah, number 11, from Cave Carson. From Cave Carson says, Dear John and Jeff, several questions. What is the greatest Quentin Tarantino film? All right, John, let's do this on three. You ready? Okay, one, two... three, Inglourious
Reservoir
Bastards.
Dogs. Oh, my God. Inglourious Bastards is awful.
Oh, my God. Reservoir Dogs is like... you know what? It's a good movie, but it has so much excess of the...
Inglourious Bastards is literally one of my least favorite of his movies.
It's one of my favorite of his.
Oh, my God. That horrible revenge porn shit is the worst, and there's not even a plot I care about. It's basically just that one actor who's propping everything up.
That's not even close to true. There are a lot of really good actors in it. It's unusual to see Mike Myers in a brief reserved role. I thought that was awesome. I mean, it's the one time where I've ever cared about the tenseness of one of his interminable long-ass conversations, which I do not care about, by the way, throughout most of Reservoir Dogs.
Oh, I love that shit. I love the long conversation thing.
I honestly, that's the thing that would make it so that we would never possibly agree. I was thinking, because I knew that about you, that you were going to say fucking Death Proof.
Which I've never seen.
You've never seen Death Proof?
No. Okay. I saw Planet Terror, but I didn't see Death Proof.
Okay. Death Proof is a bunch of girls have a conversation in a bar. It takes about 40 fucking minutes.
Oh, I know.
And then they all die. And then there's three new girls. And they have the same, different 40-minute conversation in a fucking breakfast restaurant about fucking nothing, and then the same guy attacks them, and they beat him up.
Yep. I know what the actual plot is.
Ugh, plot my ass.
I will plot your ass.
At least the one long, boring conversation in Inglourious Basterds is awesome. Actually, the two of them. The Hans Landa talking to the French guy at the beginning about the people who are hidden underneath them. Amazing. And then the scene in the underground bar. Amazing. Because it's all very, very tense, and the conversation actually is relevant to what's happening. I mean, But then you have like the tip conversation in, you know what, I can't even say that that's bad. That is actually
no, it's
great.
A great conversation.
Yeah, you know what, that's a great conversation. Cause it's, but that's, it's again, it's being sold on the strength of the actors.
Yeah. No, and I just did not give a damn about Inglourious Basterds at all. I didn't like any of the characters. I didn't particularly care about anything that they were doing. It just, I don't know why, nothing in that movie stuck with me.
I knew there was no way we were going to agree on this one. And
okay, how about Django? Huh? That shit was amazing.
Django Unchained was straight up amazing. I have no complaints.
There you go.
So how about some of his softer period shit? Like, how do you feel about Jackie Brown?
Not the best. What about, what is it, True Love? Huh? True Romance.
True
Sorry.
Romance. I actually haven't seen True Romance. So
oh,
that's,
okay.
That's my death proof.
Oh, okay,
I've
there
seen
you go.
True Romance. I've seen everything else. How about From Dusk Till Dawn?
Dusk Till Dawn's very good.
Not directed by him, I don't think, but...
No. Well, was it, or was he just in it? I think it might have been both.
Yeah.
But, nah, it was good. It was interesting for a vampire movie. It did a little bit with that.
The swerve is amazing. I think that's the big thing in that movie that sells it, is that I think the thing about that movie is that they didn't sell it as, like, this is a vampire movie. They sold it as, oh, here's another one of them cool heist movies where cool smoking dudes in
black
jackets.
Oh, yeah, they're like, oh, it's Clooney and Tarantino, and they're robbers, and they're doing stuff. And you're like, okay.
Yeah, so that movie is all about the twist and the swerve. How about Pulp Fiction? Let's do The Big Dog.
Well, Pulp Fiction is still amazing to this day.
It's an important movie. I can give it that much. I mean, I like it a lot, but the big thing about it is that the whole breaking the chronology.
Yeah, I think that getting as popular as it did really established a lot of other films that came along and were like, oh, we can do that now.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I'm just a sucker for war movies. I don't know.
Maybe.
I know that's true, but anyway, that's gonna be that for us. Next one. You are given mini hot dogs to eat in a sitting with choice of condiments. Do you take your time eating them like a gentleman or shovel them down like a feral boy? Okay, feral boy, by the way, sounds like a British punk song from the 70s. That sounds like something that, like, I can't even think of a band off the top of my head. Like Uriah Heep would sing.
Wow. You know, generally, I would say I'd probably eat them fairly slowly. I don't know what it is about hot dogs, but I'm not one to be like, yeah, I'm going to scarf that shit down.
I think it's probably just that hot dogs aren't very good.
Nah, hot dogs are great.
I mean, ultimately, you could be eating almost anything better than a hot dog is what it really... I mean, I'm such a huge fan of hot links, and I don't know... when we're talking hot dogs in all of these hot dog questions, John, like when we really boil it down, we're talking about like...
Boil it.
no one
hot dogs.
Boil a hot dog. Unless you're boiling it in beer so you can then grill it, you're not... Boiling a hot dog is a bad idea. But are we talking about just like straight up a ballpark Frank, like just a pink tube of meat? Is that where we're going with
hey,
this?
Look, I have no problems with a good pink tube of meat.
Welcome to
There's
white
ween. There's nothing I like better than a white ween with a hot pink tube of meat.
Well, I'm just, is that what we're talking about though? Are we talking about a Frank?
I mean, occasionally.
Or are we talking, like, when we talk about hot dog questions, are you picturing a nice, tasty, like, glistening sausage with, like, the snap of the skin casing? And
oh, no, I'm straight up imagining, like, some fucking like Hebrew National in your store-bought Vons brand buns.
Right, comes in that wet bag of 10 hot dogs. It plumps when you cook it. Everything plumps when you cook it, you piece of shit.
Get out. Yeah, no, that's what I'm imagining, and I like those. I don't care.
All right, fair
enough. I am trashy enough to enjoy the shittiest of hot dogs.
But you're still going
to
eat them all slow.
Yeah.
Is ultimately where we're going with this. Yeah, me too. I don't really, I'm not a scarfer in general.
Yeah, I mean, there are some things that I will eat faster than others, but hot dog, I'm like, no, I'll have a bite of that, and I'll eat some other stuff, and I'll just kind of hang out. Because you usually don't get hot dog by itself unless it's one of those super high quality ones and you're going like two hot top dog just to get a hot dog.
That is true. And even then you're getting two.
Yeah, that's true.
No one gets one hot dog at Top Dog.
No one's like, great, I'll take one of your wieners, thank you.
One of your fine Franks, nothing good on it. Thank you, Dick.
I'll take it on the plate. Thank you.
Could you stand it up, please, in a cup and hand me that? No bun.
No pretense here.
All right, let's see. You are given one wacky races car to drive as your personal vehicle. Which do you choose?
Fucking speed buggy all day, every day. My car talks to me and can drive itself.
All right, I'm going to go with the crazy fucking dragster that was driven by random like monsters.
Yeah, the monster one. Yeah, that was great.
That thing was amazing. I don't even know what those monsters were. Like, I don't remember their cartoon or anything, but there was like, they were like sort of mobstery. They looked like little gangster dudes, and then they were like a Frankenstein and a Wolfman, but they were all very squat.
Yeah.
But their car was fucking amazing. It looked like the ZZ Top Ford Eliminator done up with extra bones and shit.
Oh, yeah. No, that car was rad. Only reason I want Speed Buggy is because it can drive itself and I don't need to do anything.
Because
I am so lazy. And then he'd be like, hey, what's going on? And I'd be like, shut the fuck up, Speed Buggy, and you drive me.
I was going to say, I would get real sick of him talking. He's like almost the worst voice in Hanna-Barbera.
Oh, that's true. He is awful.
I mean, you could replace him with almost any voice in hand. Augie Doggy, Doggy Daddy would still be better.
Oh, man.
That's my boy. And you're like, shut up, just drive.
You give me a Grape Ape, I'll throw that shit in there.
Well, you know what? I can think of one worse Hanna-Barbera voice just thinking of that, which would be if the car talked like Magilla Gorilla.
Oh, I would love that. If every time the car just like looks at me and makes ape puns, I'd be like, yeah, okay.
If we pick up a girl, she'll be the gorilla of my dreams.
I love you, car. I love you so much. But especially if it only made gorilla puns and was still a car.
So a wacky race car that is a cool car that makes gorilla puns. That's your answer.
That is my dream car.
And mine's that rad undead drag race. I want that.
Thanks, Rob Zombie.
Great question. Another question here. Vin Diesel has joined your latest campaign, but has requested you build a character for him. He plays the same character in all of his games. He's always like, oh, I play a half-drow, witch-hunter, warrior, demon rogue.
I'm a barbarian. I'm the same barbarian I've been for the last 20 years.
What game do you run, and what character does Vin play?
If he joined our latest campaign, he joins our Exalted game.
Yeah, he can join our new Exalted
game.
And
I'm sure, given what I know of his background, he would probably be some barbarian...
Some infernal or abyssal chode.
I assume he'd probably be a lunar.
Oh, yeah, I could see him being a lunar.
Full moon lunar.
That kind of makes sense. But, he literally always plays drow. That's when he's done interviews where he's talked about D&D, he's like, yeah, I like playing drow because they're all dark and metal.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I'm feeling like if he was in an abyssal game with us, we'd have to build him some dumbass abyssal who hates his master. I'm a good abyssal, except I still will kill you if you look at me the wrong way. Also, I'm surrounded by sexy babes at all times.
Thank you, Bloodshit Killfuck.
Yeah, that's it. That's what he'd be playing, Bloodshit Killfuck. The abyssal fucking, probably, which one's their chosen of battles? Their fighty one.
It's
Midnight Cast, is that right? No, it's the opposite of Dawn, it's Dusk Cast.
Yeah, Dusk.
Yeah. Alright, so, okay. Next question, John?
Let's see, from Havoc 4, we're skipping straight to the second half of this question.
There was a good bit at the beginning about RPGs, but we're just pushing through to non-RPG questions.
Is there any pieces of media you want to like but end up despising?
Yeah, I have that problem a lot. Horror movies is the one for me. I know it was the joke at the intro, whatever, but it's actually true that I keep watching them wanting to like them, but they are so tropey. Like, they feel like the guidepost requirements of horror movies are so bad. All a movie needs to do to be a good horror movie is not do them.
Yeah, the issue with horror movie is it's basically the go-to for anyone that's making a cheap movie.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't need to have any decent ideas to still be like, oh, we technically made a horror film. Like, if you're making a shitty low-budget comedy movie...
You still have to write jokes.
Yeah, you still have to have actual jokes in there.
Yeah.
So... with a horror movie, they're like, oh, all we need is a little TNA, some fake blood, we're good to go.
And you can do it without those these days. I feel like all the movies I sit down and watch with you that are for a horror review or whatever, they don't even bother with TNA anymore. Like, that's not even a thing. It's just, these three people live in a house, so they're scared of a mirror, and the movie's over. The end.
Well, that's because you end up watching just real bad movies with me.
It is super true. I keep trying. I keep trying to watch horror movies. I keep trying to watch the good, famous horror movies that come out, and I'm still like, all right, there's the designated survivor girl. There's the obvious Cassandra trope.
Oh.
You know what I'm talking about, right? Every horror movie has to have a Cassandra. It doesn't have to be a girl, but every horror movie has a Cassandra.
Yeah.
The character who has to cry wolf, but ultimately proves right in the end. You know, the one like in Evil Dead who's like, I was raped by a tree. And they're like, no, you weren't. That's dumb. Oh, shit, she was right. There's horrible rapey trees.
One of the big things in horror that I actually really love is the trope of the asshole is always right in the end. You'll find, like, at least midway or at the beginning of the movie, the person who is the most unlikable character will be like, what we need to do is this. And everyone will be like, shut up, you're an asshole. That's an asshole thing to do. And then it turns out that that's what they would have done to survive.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I love that shit.
So, anyway, horror movies my answer. I keep trying. The tropes keep driving me out. John, what about you?
Pieces of media that I want to like but end up despising.
Yeah.
Man, I don't know.
Musicals.
I love musicals. Man, I just...
Hamilton.
Hamilton. Yeah. Man, I should. By all rights, I should fucking love Hamilton.
Everything about Hamilton is exactly aimed... It's like it was written to target your brain.
And yet...
Like, this is a musical about American history that has a ton of hip-hop in it.
I'm like, oh, yeah, that sounds amazing. And then I listened to it, and I went, eh, I don't really care.
Yeah, I don't get it, because it hit me straight up, and I was like, oh, I'm on board.
Yeah, I listened to a lot of it while I was on vacation, and I was just like, man, I don't give a fuck about this.
I tried to just play Wait For It near you, because Wait For It is the song. Wait For It is a Sisqó song. It is straight up a Sisqó song about Aaron Burr. It should have worked on you, and it just didn't hit. I don't understand it.
Yeah, I don't get it. Yeah. It's weird.
But I bet you wish you could like it so you could be along with everybody else and be.
Yeah, that would be great. If I was on board for Hamilton and I liked it, then I could talk to other people and be like, man, I enjoy this thing. Do you enjoy that? Of course you do. Everyone enjoys it. But nope. For some reason, it's just one of the few musicals that I'm like, nope. I like Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, and the songs in that are terrible.
They really are.
They are awful, and I still like it.
I don't get it. But how about Starlight Express?
You know, I've never listened to more than the one song from that.
And even that song is kind of meh. All right. Let's see. What next, John?
It's me next, isn't it? Yep.
Number 13 from Fabulous Johnson says, which sci-fi RPG most accurately predicts future events?
Let's see.
I'm going to say The Great War of Magellan, because you don't fucking know.
You don't know.
That's set 15,000 years from now. It could be right.
Yeah, well, you know what I'm going to say is Rogue Trader. It's set 40,000 years from now. Fuck you, you don't know.
Even then, I think you'd probably know if Rogue Trader was right by now, because I feel like the Emperor was some sort of, like, super god Native American dude by this point in history.
Yeah, but we're saying future events.
Oh, okay.
I'm saying in the future, we're going to have giant floating cathedrals, and we're mostly just going to be war... like genetically engineered marines, and we're gonna fight elves in space.
Yeah, space elves, and then some like walking fungi men.
Yeah, obviously.
Man, those orcs, they are fun guys.
Lol.
I don't know. Is real answer to that? Gamma world? Like the old gamma world? Like we're gonna nuke ourselves into shit and have to deal with the radioactive fallout of it. I don't think it'll be like the fun new Gamma World where you get to play like a swarm of tiny Yetis.
Yeah, no.
It'll just be some sad shit.
It'll be the most depressing one possible.
Yeah. All right, so there you go. Next.
Tuppany Uppercut says, dear System Mastery, I am a longtime martial arts hobbyist who has been studying Chinese Kung Fu for many years now. Specifically, the internal styles of Qing Yi and Chen Family Taiji Quan, along with a little Five Family Southern Boxing. However, lately it feels like I've been missing something and have been interested in expanding my knowledge a bit to fill the gaps. As System Masters, do you think I should continue exploring the Southern arts? Maybe with Hung Gar, Choi Lu Fat, or Wing Chun? Would it be better to expand into the Northern styles of Baiji Quan or Northern Praying Mantis? Maybe I should even go completely off track and look into modern Sanda. Or do you think I should just keep my mouth shut and keep doing what my Sifu is telling me? I think keeping your mouth shut and doing what your Sifu tells you is always the correct choice.
I think that's definitely true. Although if you're looking to branch out, I'd recommend looking into Mugi Gong, which makes it sound like I'm making up a fake, like kind of racist Chinese word, but I'm not. It's a really fun martial art that's all based on improvised weapon studies.
Yeah.
It's like hit people with table legs and playing cards and nonsense. It's my favorite martial art, and if you're a badass martial artist, I want to see someone in the world who is a badass martial artist at that.
Also, if it's not too much trouble, could you give us a little more insight into the mysterious but deadly fighting styles of the cartoon hot dog and 10-year-old girl?
Well, the 10-year-old girl, as everyone knows, doesn't touch the ground because she can float, and she's a witch. So she floats around with a crystal ball and has a force field and shoots beams.
Yeah.
Doesn't really have a fighting style, per se. It's more like she's just sort of always floating around and firing beams of hex blasts at people.
And most of the cartoon hot dog fighting style revolves around hammer space and just getting things like anvils, giant hammers,
he's like
safes.
That X-Men character, Toon.
Yeah. That's exactly it.
Yeah. And not like the cartoons upon which Toon is based. But or even Freakazoid, but specifically the X-Men character Toon.
Yes.
God, dumbest character.
Well, I don't know that I'd go that far.
Well, okay, just because Dupe exists doesn't mean that... And I love Dupe.
Look, just because there is Beak.
There's Beak, there's Maggot. Maggot might be the worst X-Man.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
All right, so there you go, fighting styles. Floating and hammer space.
Yep.
All right, Dear Spider-Man, how are you doing? I am doing well. I'm sorry, this is from Battle Cattle. Dear Spider-Man, how are you doing? I am doing well. I saw you earlier apprehending a ne'er-do-well. He had only just stolen my hot dog and was about to make his getaway when you appeared and used your webs to craft a fully functional riverboat. I'm not sure why you did that, considering we were downtown, but it was very impressive, and in the end, the quality of the construction stunned him long enough for you to retrieve the hot dog. Good job. Anyway, the ordeal left me wondering about your webs. Can they be used to create a hot dog complete with condiments and a bun? If so, would you eat that hot dog? I know I would. Sincerely, CB East.
Nope.
Is that you, Spider-Man? Is that
yep,
your, is that
that's
your
Peter
Parker?
That's me, Spider-Man, your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. Don't eat my webs.
Spider-Man.
There's some weird chemicals in that. Also, that came out of me.
Wait, so are you currently the Spider-Man who generates webs instead of having web shooters?
Yeah, that's me. Sure, why not?
So you're like the Sam Raimi Spider-Man. You're like are you a Tobey Maguire type right now?
I'm a little Tobey Maguire.
I'm a little bit Tobey Maguire.
A little bit rock and roll.
A little bit rock and roll. Okay, well, let me ask you this then, Spider-Man. Why don't you just freaking settle down with Mary Jane and get it over with? It's so annoying.
Well, you know, if I'm married, then the tax situation changes, and man, my my work is very weird, and I've got some strange hours. So, you know, I'm just still playing the field a little.
I've also wondered, J. Jonah Jameson has launched this ridiculous campaign against you for like decades, where he's like, Spider-Man's a menace, blah, blah, blah. Spider-Man's a secret identity you've created. There is nothing stopping you from coming up with another one and just doing the same thing. You could even do a thing where you foil yourself and have J. Jonah Jameson love you forever. He's like, I love Brown Recluse Man.
Look, at that point, I'd basically be giving up on this brand I've made. Now, I like to stay on brand.
I understand. You've been doing it for... I love the Dune Buggy, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And if I were to change every time someone critiqued me, I would be down to, like, being a weird orb weaver. I mean... I'm just
but it's not
Spider-Man.
Everybody. It's the only one who matters is J. Jonah Jameson. No one else owns a giant newspaper, which, by the way, how is that not already folded completely?
Oh, I know, right?
There's no room in this modern death of media environment for an entire newspaper about you.
He's
no,
basically
no
running the American version of The Sun, okay? I'm surprised he doesn't have a naked girl on page 5.
I'm also kind of surprised that makes you the royals of America.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's like, ooh, Spider-Man been spotted with a right tot down by the Thames.
Which would be amazing. In fact, I should probably go save London. There are so many people in New York.
That is true. It'd be a lot easier for you to spend time saving London. Thanks, Spider-Man. Keep up the good work. Also, can I eat your hot dog webs or whatever?
Please don't.
There we are. Oh, P.S. May I have my hot dog back? Thanks in advance.
Nope. Ate it already. Sorry. It's hungry work being your friendly neighborhood, Spider-Man.
That is true. All right. By the way, is it true that you can do whatever a spider can?
Oh, I mean, not whatever a spider can. Let's not go that far.
I mean, it's in the song. I've been wondering for a long time now whether or not you could just let off a spinneret of your web and just fly along with it.
No, I mean, they exaggerate a little.
It's a little more.
It's a little much.
I mean, granted, I've never seen you catch a thief just like flies.
Yeah, I don't even catch flies. I don't even know where that comes from.
All right, well...
I catch a thief like thieves.
You catch thieves like Jim, the thief.
Yeah.
It's just a list of examples of the just, song.
Look.
Catching thieves, just like the Shocker.
Catches thieves, just like that guy. He stole a wallet. He's in jail. Look out. He'll probably steal again.
Does several of the things a spider can, plus several more things that spiders can't do.
like hold down a job
or have spider sense.
All right.
Next question.
Pulp to Pixel asks, "Hey, cheese dudes, as masters of the system masteriness, you are needed to gaming systems to meet your gaming comedic needs."
Okay.
Oh, you are used to gaming systems to meet your gaming comedic needs. Man, woo.
Get a little tired, John?
Reading comprehension is going down.
Try some glasses.
You have in the past reviewed superhero RPGs, but it seems like you haven't been too fond of the systems so far. Keeping with this theme, what would be your favorite non-superhero-themed RPG you have reviewed to create a system-breaking superhero character with?
All right, so basically the idea being what game would you take and then make a superhero with that wouldn't, like, okay, I can see where that's going. And I think we've already established that very well. It would be Witch Girls, Witch Girls Adventures.
Oh, yeah. Well, Punch Witch is obviously a great superhero.
Yeah, because you can use Witch Girls Adventures to make that anime guy, that one punch man.
Yeah.
Where you're like, what's your character? Oh, I just dumped all my points into strength. My character can punch and kill anyone instantly and never miss, and there's nothing they can do about it.
Yeah, the other one would, of course, be Scion.
Oh, yeah.
Where
yeah.
you're like, oh, I've got a star in dexterity, which means I automatically hit you and you automatically miss me. Ta-da!
I'm some sort of hero who does that.
Well, at that point, you'd have probably the Flash. You'd be like, I'm just so fast. You'd get the Psychopomp tree in Scion and just go, all right, I move so quickly, I can be in two places at the same time. I create a speed mirage.
That's one of the worst. How many of Flash's powers are just garbage?
Just
nonsense.
Like most of them?
Yeah.
I'm amazed that they've managed to do so many, though. Because fucking that show is like, yeah, any dumb thing that any writer has put into The Flash, sure, we'll do that.
Not just the show, but over the years, the things that they've shown The Flash do. The only person who's had their powers abused more than The Flash is Superman directly.
Yeah.
Whenever Superman's like, I'll use my memory-erasing super kiss.
Yeah. At least with The Flash, they try to keep it speed-based, but he's just like, I've got super math. And you're like, come on, god damn it, don't.
I'll use my super weaving to stop this threat.
No, don't.
I'll solve this problem the old-fashioned way, with super automotive assembly.
Yeah, the old, like, weird Silver Age Superman has
Superman.
Every power.
Yeah, just and they're just random every time. He's like, I have super computer brain.
Great.
Lois Lane, I see you're saving the day with your educated feet. This must be one of your comics. Why am I here? Oh, wait, to be a love object.
Oh, I know. To sell these comics.
All right. Wow.
Okay, so you have many times mentioned your fondness of musicals and karaoke. Which of the games you have reviewed would be the best for simulating musicals mechanics-wise?
Promethean.
Okay, sell it to me.
Okay, because it's a musical in and of itself. You have a story about a couple of Prometheans who can't find love because everyone in the world eventually comes to hate them. It's a musical setup where they come to a town and they have a little song about trying to fit in, and they're like, oh, I love this mountain town. And then like they meet a baker, and the baker's like, hi there. And then by the end of the song, the baker's like, burn him. Burn that witch. And it just keeps, it's got a three-act setup where by the end of it, they've come to terms with the fact that they can't be friends with the world, but at least they can be friends with each other.
Okay.
What, you got something better?
Well, I don't know why in my head I was thinking, like, creating a musical, like a literal musical within the world mechanically.
Oh, that is a very different experience.
Yeah, that was very weird to me.
All right, and what would you do for that?
Oh, God, I don't even know what I would use for that. There's just...
I feel like Gamma World would be a really good answer for that.
Eh.
No, think. Bear it out with me. One of the things about Gamma World...
No, I will not.
One of the things about Gamma World that sells it as a book is that the adventures don't really matter. It's just...
Well, that's why I was going to say, like, Feng Shui, because you could be, like...
Oh, Feng Shui would be good, too, yeah.
Yeah, because you can just have your weird archetype characters and have them... very easily be like, okay, here's your weird musical that you are making.
I feel like the answer to this is just going to be all the ones that we've liked.
Because
I like them and I could easily work in them. I'd be like, yeah, Vanishing Point. You could just do Sweeney Todd. No problem.
Hong Kong Action Theater. It's already about making a movie anyway. You just make it about making a musical.
I mean, granted, we haven't reviewed that yet, but yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So there you go. There's a bunch of answers.
Yeah, just so many.
Yeah. Too many, one might say.
One might, if you were a dick.
All right, next question comes to us from Alex from Texas from Oregon. Says, question for George Lucas. John, get your George Lucas voice ready.
Okay.
Why is everyone in Star Wars Revenge of the Sith just sitting on couches and talking? Seriously, they spend so much time on couches, it's obscene. Did George receive money from the furniture version of the Illuminati?
Well, look, couches are very important in the Star Wars universe. I think before then, I didn't have the money to realize my vision of couches. And by the time I got to Revenge of the Sith, I could really, really push that forward. I think that's what the audience and what the kids want.
Now, are you planning to release a special edition again of the starting trilogy, the originals, where there are more couches and more couch-based material?
Oh, yeah. In fact, my original vision for Endor when they are battling there on the forest moon was instead of speeders, they were all on couches. Couches that moved really fast.
Flying tree couches, basically?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And was Jabba's sail barge originally just a giant couch?
Oh, so big, with little couches on top of it.
Just covered in smaller couches. Okay, little panels popping up from the sides of the couch where you could keep the remote or a cannon.
Oh, it was the best. And the cup holder on the side of it, there was a man with a gun.
Well, George, thank you so much for your time. You're an awful man.
I know.
All right, let's see here. Question for Hillary Clinton. What's your go? I guess I'll take this one. I've got to be Hillary Clinton. Question for Hillary Clinton. What's your go-to cocktail for entertaining? I like a Harvey Wallbanger.
Done.
All right. Question for the boys. I guess that's us. How many licks does it take to get to the center of a Tootsie Pop? And why do the British spell center wrong?
Well, it all goes back to the time where we split off from the British and then everything just went to hell.
Oh, they just kept getting more British-y.
Yeah, like they kept throwing in extra U's and rearranging R's.
Yeah, it's like we moved out of there, and all of a sudden, all of them just got yet more Chaucery.
Yeah, they sent all of the more American-ish people to America and kept all the very British.
Yeah,
the most British.
The most British. And then they just got even more and more British over there. It's like the whole city is just boiling. The whole country is just boiling, and the steam that's rising off of it is stuff that makes sense. Just leaving behind a thick residue of people who can't spell color.
A thick, bubbling cud of British nonsense.
That's correct.
Just a blood pudding of complete bullshit.
Anyway, no one knows how many licks it takes. I just bite the fucking thing the moment it goes in my mouth.
216.
Is that your answer?
That is my answer. I did it when I was in like seventh grade because I was an idiot.
I've never put one in my mouth without immediately just cracking it open to the center.
I never made it without biting.
I just bite immediately. I don't even try. I put the fucking thing in my mouth, and the moment it's even slightly wet, I just crack it in half with my super teeth. By the way, I haven't done that since like in like 5 years because my teeth are shit now. It's like when I was a kid, I had amazing teeth, and now I'm like I'm in the fucking Pogues.
Yeah, I feel you on that one.
Yep. Okay. I love the show. Keep it up, Big Lee, and please, for the health of your and your girl listeners' pets, take them to get spayed and neutered and register them to vote.
Yep.
That's okay. My cats are both spayed. We're good to go on that.
They are both spayed and neutered.
And registered to vote.
Yes.
They're both third party.
They are both libertarians. Because they're cats.
Cats are all libertarians.
Obviously.
Little known fact.
Cats are all like, fuck you, got mine.
Fuck you, got mine. I don't know what Aleppo is.
Yeah, cats don't know what Aleppo is. It's just like dogs don't know what apples is.
I got one of our cats sitting here right next to me. Bearcat, could you please name your favorite world leader?
Nothing.
Nothing. Nothing at all. She's a libertarian. All right, John?
How are we doing on time?
You know what? Let's wrap this bad boy up. I got two more questions for us here. We'll save the other two for later. And I'm going to take this first one. Here we go. Dear beings of alleged existence, Jeff and John, it's Omnicrom the Nowhere Man again. Question one, what is your favorite number and why? My favorite number is 6,492, because it's fun to say with the way it lilts up and down, and because if you add the digits together, you almost get 20. So, John, your favorite number?
From back in the day, way back in the day, is 24.
24? Any particular reason?
Because when I was a kid, that was the channel that Nickelodeon was on.
Very nice. It was 33 for me, but that won't be my favorite channel. My favorite number, by the way, is 37. And it's because when I was on a high school water polo team, we all had these numbered caps. and the Caps went 1, who was the goalie, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and so on, up until 16, and then 37. And I claimed it. I called dibs on the weird one so I could have number 37, so it's always been my favorite number.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Question 2. Let's see. What do you look for in a horror movie? By the time this question is read aloud, Horrortoberfest will be over. So let me say from the past future that I actually really enjoy the daily articles
Thank
and the occasional
you.
Podcast reviews. John, great job as always.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love reading the reviews and impressions, but I also like to learn about the standards and assumptions behind them. When you watch a horror film, what do you especially like or dislike to see? What is a 5 out of 5 horror film for you? How clear is the distinction between 5 out of 5 and 4.5 out of 5? Let's go with this, John. What's your 5 out of 5 horror movie?
There are a few for me. Of course, the bog standard ones are going to be things like Alien, The Thing, Nightmare on Elm Street 3, The Dream Warriors.
All right. And what is a 4.5 out of 5? What's an almost there?
I would probably put The Ring at a 4.5 out of 5. I fucking love it. It's not perfect, but I really, really enjoy it.
It has some amazing scares.
Yeah.
Even I get bored of The Ring through a lot of it, but the few scares in it that are amazing, like the horse suicide and the closet reveal.
Honestly, for me, a lot of it that I love in that movie is the sound. The guy who
sound,
was
yeah.
doing the sound editing and production on there, because every weird sound in the videotape ends up happening in the real world. So not only just the images from the videotape end up having corresponding things that happen in the world from when you watch them, but the noises themselves are found throughout the movie. It's really well done.
But I guess the question is, what would make it perfect?
Probably getting rid of some of the horse stuff wasn't really necessary.
Fair enough. Although that horse running off the ferry is my favorite part of the movie, I'm still okay with that.
Yeah, I mean, the I like what they added compared to the original Ringu, but it didn't really add much to the movie. And I think if the other thing is, I'm generally annoyed by creepy little kid.
Oh,
not Samara, but her actual son was like, "Oh, I'm a creepy kid, and I'm not gonna say anything like a normal kid would."
Oh yeah. I don't care for that trope either.
Yeah,
the kid that, like, when we were watching that other movie where the kid who only communicated through creepy drawings.
Yeah,
I'm good. The kids like that are so rare, and yet they're so common in horror movies.
You know, it's the same thing. Like dissociative identity disorder is in literally fucking everything. The James McAvoy Split movie that's coming up is like, "Oh no, McAvoy has split personalities," and I'm like, fuck you. This is the most overdone thing ever.
Yeah. So, creepy kid. I think the creepy kid that is not Samara is a really good answer.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see here. Question 4, because I'm skipping question 3 because we are really short on time. Have you ever regretted the creation of any of your running gags? If so, which ones?
You know, after this week's afterthought, I'm kind of regretting the hot dog thing. Because we've got like 12 hot dog questions.
You know, I don't really have an answer for this one. So, John, if you'll just go ahead and take question 20 for me real quick.
Okay, sure, fine. So, question 20. Wait a second. Is it time for an episode of Donkey Talk?
Anyway, that's been the afterthought. That's from Cal Wilkes.
Thank you, Cal.
Is it time for an episode of Donkey Talk? It's not, but it will be next week because we're at an hour and 20.
Yeah, well, dang, we have gone on. We do go on.
We do go on. So if you didn't get your question in this time, don't worry. We're not going to get rid of them. We'll just put them on the next week's episode. We're just getting more and more listeners. It's amazing how many questions are piling in these days. If you're looking for the best way to get your question onto the show, it's to leave it at the Reddit forum. That's the easiest way to get a hold of us, Reddit/System Mastery, the afterthought questions. Thread there is real easy for us to find. The other thing is maybe lay off the hot dog questions for a little while.
Man, it just happened that like everyone who wrote in for this episode was like, hot dogs. That's what I want.
I love hot dog questions. The history of that is that I was sitting around asking John stupid questions on a ride somewhere once, and hot dog questions became the theme.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. Maybe let's do some new in jokes. Let's get some Frankenstein's dad questions in there. All right. So as always, you can find us at SystemMasteryPodcast.com, SystemMastery@gmail.com, SystemMastery on Facebook or Twitter. Leave us your comments, questions, whatever you want to do there. Follow us and support us on Patreon, System Mastery, or Patreon.com/SystemMastery, to unlock our bonus content episodes and help us keep doing more cool stuff for you. Lord knows something needs to pay John's rent, so let's get those monies.
Yep.
He is just, like I was saying before, he is just Dickensian sad these days. That's dystopian Dickens. Dickensian.
Dickensian. It's like Dickens, but on Discworld.
Yeah. Dickensian. That's stupid. So, support us on Patreon. Visit us at SystemMasteryPodcast.com. Keep those questions coming in. We'll see you in a week for another episode of System Mastery. And, of course, we'll have a movie episode coming out real soon. Now, John's got to get home so we can write the movie review for the day.
Yep.
And I have to edit this thing. So thanks so much for listening. Have a good week. Last day to start again. It's a nice day for a white ween. It's a nice day to start again.